The following program, The Russ Belleville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belleville Show are their own, and The Russ Belleville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. And I hope you're having happy holidays. It is show number 110. It is December 17, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us. This is our final week of shows for 2012 before we take our two-week Festivus break. Are you looking forward to Festivus there, Brian?
I don't really celebrate holidays, so we'll see how this turns out.
This one's for the rest of us. It's a Festivus. You may notice I still have a little bit of a cold here, too, so struggling to get by. The voice isn't what it should be, and we'll see how it works. But thanks for joining us for today's show. All sorts of great stuff on today's show. First of all, at half past the hour, we're going to have our Listen to Your Mother segment. We do this on the first and third Mondays of the month with representatives from Moms for Marijuana, Normal Women's Alliance, all the great groups out there that are fighting to bring women up to the level men are on marijuana legalization. We look in the polls and women are almost always 10 points behind on their support for marijuana legalization. So today we're going to speak with Bonnie Jean, and she's with Kansas Moms for Marijuana. Boy, talk about a place that might be kind of difficult to be a mom for marijuana, right there in the heartland in Kansas. She'll be on at half past, and possibly also Sharon from Georgia will be joining her on the air as well. We'll see. We're still working it out here behind the scenes. Also on today's show, a radical rant you've got to stay tuned for. Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone has uncovered shocking details of a settlement with one of the largest and oldest and most respected British banks that admitted to laundering drug cartel and terrorist money. You'll be shocked by what light slap on the wrist they got away with. Also on today's show, and for the rest of the week, these next five shows, we're going to be doing the top five of 2012, a different subject each day. And today is going to be the top five stupid prohibition stories of 2005. So our special correspondent, 1920s old-timey radio reporter Freddie Farrakh, will be joining us with the top five stupid prohibition stories. I understand Freddie's a little sick today, too, but we'll see how well he does. Also, we've got our marijuana headlines coming up right after this first break. All sorts of interesting news coming from Colorado, Canada, Turkey, and more. So marijuana, it's everywhere, and wherever it is, we'll be telling you all about it. Thanks for joining us. This is the Russ Belleville Show. Happy holidays.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belleville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
I smell pot coming from over here and grilled onions from over there. Two of my favorite smells ever. Both those onions and that pot smell really good up here, you know.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez. Oh,
cannabinoids.
What a goof. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for the dope weed. Fire it up. Flame on, flame
on. Now it's time for your marijuana headlines. Kerry Gallagher is on holiday break. I'm Radical Russ with the news. Colorado Marijuana Legalization Task Force meets for the first time on Monday, reporting from the Denver Post. The group charged with creating regulations for Colorado's first-in-the-nation recreational marijuana industry will hold its first meeting today. Governor John Hickenlooper created the task force to do the heavy lifting on needed regulations for the recreational marijuana industry created by Amendment 64, which legalized limited possession and sales of marijuana in Colorado. The amendment requires the state to begin issuing licenses for recreational marijuana stores by January 1, 2014, meaning the legislative session starting next month is the only chance lawmakers will have to write rules for the stores before they begin opening. He also charged the task force with looking at other issues related to marijuana, including such things as rules for growing industrial hemp, laws related to driving while high, education about the health impacts of marijuana use, and the conflict Amendment 64 creates between state and federal law. Man sues Larimer County Sheriff over destroyed medical marijuana plants after acquittal. This from the Coloradoan. A man jurors acquitted of multiple marijuana felonies has sued the Larimer County Sheriff's Office after his 42 plants were destroyed. Denver lawyer Rob Corey said his client expects to receive $5,000 per plant, totaling $210,000, based on what law enforcers have testified a marijuana plant is worth, in addition to his attorney fees. Caleb Young, age 34, had been growing the plants in a Wellington home in compliance with Colorado's medical marijuana laws, and during a warrant search in September of 2010, had shown deputies paperwork authorizing him to do so, according to the lawsuit. Young had no other criminal record more serious than a traffic violation, according to Colorado court records. Feds use forfeiture laws in medical marijuana cases. This from thecolumbian.com. Federal authorities are increasingly using asset forfeiture laws to seize money and property from people they believe are exploiting Oregon's medical marijuana program. A review of U.S. District Court records by the Medford Mail Tribune newspaper shows that in 2010, prosecutors filed just one forfeiture case to seize money related to marijuana that was grown under the program. Last year, there were a dozen such cases, and there were 11 in the first 11 months of this year. Civil forfeiture laws allow police to seize the proceeds of illegal activity without necessarily filing criminal charges against those involved. In the past 15 months in Oregon, the U.S. government has laid claim to more than $255,000 in cash, 6 properties, 2 weapons, and 3 vehicles in cases where the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program is specifically cited in court affidavits. Said Leslie Westfall, the assistant U.S. attorney, quote, civil forfeiture is less expensive for the government and makes a better statement. To take the profit away is probably the best means to attack the problem, end quote. Canada is getting out of the medical marijuana business. This from the Associated Press. Canada's conservative government will soon stop producing and distributing medical marijuana, leaving it up to the private sector in a policy change that angered critics on Monday. Ottawa would no longer produce and distribute marijuana for medicinal purposes. Instead, companies will be licensed to grow and sell the product
at market rates. Patients with a prescription from a doctor starting in March 2013 will be allowed to purchase a variety of strains of marijuana from licensed producers who will set the prices. Canada's health department currently sells marijuana for $5 Canadian per gram, which it says is heavily subsidized by taxpayers. The street value can be as many as three times more. Turkey raids Kurdish camps, finds tons of marijuana and bomb-making components. This from worldtribune.com. Turkey has conducted a major operation in which weapons and drugs were seized from Kurdish rebels. Officials said Turkish army units and security forces stormed seven villages around the southeastern city of Diyarbakir. Officials said this marked one of the first operations that targeted Kurdish weapons and bomb-making facilities. They said the raid, in which three people were arrested, netted more than $20 million worth of drugs. Toprak said, quote, "We have uncovered 21 tons of marijuana, as well as several cells filled with ammunition and explosives. The operation landed a huge blow to the terrorist income," end quote. And that's our marijuana headlines for today, Monday, December 17th, 2012. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we get a visit from old-timey radio reporter Freddie Farrakh with our first of our top five segments for the end of 2012. We start with the top five stupid prohibition stories right after this.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, we've made a call on the controversial marijuana ballot question, Amendment 64. Floyd, we can safely say this is going to pass.
It is legal in the Constitution to possess and grow up to six plants.
You cannot be arrested for being in possession of an ounce of marijuana.
Colorado and the state of Washington, they voted to legalize marijuana, not for medical use, but for recreational use.
This is the beginning of taking apart prohibition one state at a time. That's how they did it 80 years ago against alcohol. That's how we're going to do it now against marijuana.
We are the champions.
As a public service, the Russ Belville Show reminds you that smoking marijuana does not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana, and prohibition is always waiting for another victim. Learn your lesson from today's stupid prohibition stories.
With your top five stupid prohibition stories of 2012, I'm old-timey 1920s radio reporter Freddie Farrakh. It's that time of year again when we recollect all the events of the prior year. Every day here in our final week of 2012 shows, we will bring you a top five list of the events and stories we have covered. Today, it is the top five stories of unfortunate cannabis consumers jailed for doing something stupid that usually wouldn't have gotten them jailed if not for prohibition. Number five. When tending your pot garden, don't just yell, "Come in," to anyone who knocks. Joseph Ebeling, age 49, of Loeb Avenue, is charged with cultivation of marijuana, possession of a felony amount of marijuana, and possession of drug paraphernalia. He remained in the detention center Tuesday in lieu of $11,000 bond. Monroe Sheriff's spokesperson said that the sergeant was dispatched to Ebeling's house last Friday to check out the report of a possibly suicidal person. When he knocked on the door, Ebeling reportedly shouted, "Come in!" When Madnick opened the door, he reportedly saw Ebeling cutting up a pot plant, with several more plants by his side. Ebeling looked up, saw it was the police, and reportedly uttered a curse. Number 4. That no smoking on planes rule applies to marijuana too. A man faces drug charges after allegedly smoking pot on a JetBlue flight to Newark, New Jersey Airport. Police say the man claimed he had marijuana for medicinal purposes. Crew members from Flight 510 from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, say they became suspicious Monday when the man, identified as 43-year-old Adam Blumenkrantz of Los Angeles, dropped a clear plastic bag in the cabin. As the plane approached Newark, the crew reported the man entered the laboratory. When he emerged, they say there was the strong smell of marijuana. Number 3. Radical Russ's dream, 24 pounds of marijuana found at an In-N-Out burger. It seems these two dudes, Steven and Trevor, had 24 one-pound bags of marijuana in their BMW parked at an In-N-Out Burger in Glendale. So as this cop pulls into the parking lot of this In-N-Out Burger for a double-double with fries and a side order of scripture, I presume, he notices Steven smoking cigarettes, hanging out with Trevor and a third dude, right by the front door of the In-N-Out. That is a violation of the city's ordinance banning smoking within 10 feet of a public entrance. As the cop approaches Steven, Trevor and the other dude walk away from him. As the cop talks to Steven, he sees Trevor putting something inside the passenger door. Steven explains to the cop that he's from outside the area and didn't know he could smoke there. And oh yeah, he's on parole. He has medical marijuana on him, and he doesn't know who those other two dudes are. The cop then talks to Trevor and the other dude, who say they arrived at the In-N-Out with Steven. Trevor then tells the cop he's only got a small amount of marijuana in the car, and he can go ahead and search it. In the trunk, the cop finds a locked plastic bin containing the 24 one-pound packages of marijuana. The BMW was impounded, and Steven and Trevor went to jail. The third dude was released. Number 2. Teen after marijuana plant steals tomato plant instead. A 15-year-old boy climbed into Angela Cartwright's kitchen window thinking to make off with a marijuana plant. But instead, the young thief was actually stealing a potted tomato plant, a sheriff's arrest report shows. As he was running from Cartwright's house on Carmen Avenue, the teen even yelled at Cartwright, "See, I have one of your pot plants," the arrest report states. When interviewed, the young suspect told a lawman the same thing. He broke into Cartwright's house, thinking he was getting away with a marijuana plant, the report shows. And the number 1 stupid prohibition story of 2012. Cell phone flasher busted with over 28 pounds of marijuana. An Arkansas man who Boise police say displayed a cell phone picture of his genitals to a woman at a Boise motel has been arrested on drug charges. Officials say they were called to a motel near the Boise airport at 9:43 Tuesday. A woman told police she wished to press charges over the cell phone photo. Police found 54-year-old Jeffrey B. Ash of Fayetteville, Arkansas, in a motel room. While questioning him, police smelled a strong odor of marijuana. They found Ash to be in possession of two duffel bags that contained approximately 28.5 pounds of marijuana. Ash was arrested and booked into the Ada County Jail on charges of trafficking marijuana and indecent exposure. I'm Freddie Farrakh with your stupid prohibition stories.
Wow, man.
It's hard to believe some of that stuff when you hear it, isn't it? What is it with you people taking pictures of your junk? What is it? Oh, sorry.
Glad I don't have a smartphone.
No kidding. How many times do we have to say it? Nobody needs to see a picture of your junk.
No.
Anybody that needs to see a picture of your junk
is going to see it in person.
Could probably see it in person. Right, exactly. There's no need for this. If I could just ask one thing of the young people. Well, this guy was old, but still. The young people started it.
Well, but just to clarify, all of those stories did not happen this week.
Not all this week, no. No. All for 2012. Tomorrow we will do some more top five. I haven't decided which one it will be yet, but stay tuned tomorrow and the rest of the week for the other top fives of 2012. But first...
Oh, man.
It's our fifth to the last 420 break for our Hour One people. For this year or something.
Oh, just smoke it if you got it.
All right.
Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Marijuana is harmless. That's what everybody says these days. It's fun. It's recreational. Some even call it medicine. But every year, millions of young people find out that marijuana is extremely dangerous. Every year, they find out that it's deadly. Marijuana smoke is lethal and toxic. Don't believe anything you've ever heard positive about smoking marijuana. It will kill you. Really. It's really gonna kill you. Don't smoke it. It will really, really kill you.
Harmless?
Seriously. It's gonna kill you.
Paid for by the We Are Not Even Trying Anymore, We Made It All Up, Anti-Drug Whatever Thing of America.
Fun. Big Daddy thinks. Funky,
funky, funky, funky to the bone.
Ooh, yeah.
Funky, funky, funky. Funky, funky, funky to the bone. Funky, funky, funky.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
I think we're parked,
man. Take a little trip. Take a little trip. Take a little trip and see.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, for Roots Monday today, we're doing something a little bit different, but we're sticking with the Christmas theme. I promised, holiday theme, whatever holiday it might be. Just it seems most of the songs are about Christmas. Anyway, we will do these songs we did them last week. We'll do them this week. And today I get one that is a hidden track, apparently, on one of the albums from Squirrel Nut Zippers. And I remember hearing the name of the band Squirrel Nut Zippers and thinking, what the hell were you smoking or eating or tripping on to come up with the name Squirrel Nut Zippers? What's up with that?
Maybe they were watching the that movie, There's Something About Mary.
Could be.
Nut Zippers.
Oh, God, no. Oh yeah. That hurts even to remember. Thanks. But no, I found out what it was. If you look at the picture that's up on the webcam right now, these are little candies that were called Squirrel Nut Zippers. And I don't know why, but they were kind of like a bit of honey kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And the band saw that and thought, oh, that'll be the name of our band. So hey,
good for them.
Whatever. So we will, without further ado, give you a little taste of some Squirrel Nut Zippers with Santa Claus is Smoking Reefer.
Yes, yeah. I have a very, very little secret I'd like to tell. And we think that people should know about it.
That's right.
Yeah. The snow will be falling. And the cats will be falling. Yeah. They'll be knocking themselves out.
You know the reason why?
Why?
Santa Claus is smoking reefer. Santa Claus is smoking tea. He's so high in the sky, stays loaded all the time. Ooh. Come on down.
He's got stuff for the kiddies.
Yes.
The kiddies are hip nowadays. They're not like your father and my father.
Mm-mm. The kids are jiving.
Jolly fellow, he's fat fellow, but he's not the cat you think it is. Santa Claus is lighting up to the hay.
Yes, even my heart, even my life.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That's great.
Thank you.
That should be a hit single for somebody. That's
ooh. Yeah.
Ooh, that's strong.
That's our pick to click off that album.
Yeah. Yeah, that goes to the
Actually, I haven't had a chance to talk to Mr. Armstrong before the show, but we had a great discussion about it. I just asked one of the folks in the show, Bob Backer, said, well, what is Louis Armstrong going to do? Of course, he's always going way up. Way up. Is that the highest you could get?
Well, I don't know.
Well, why don't you let me say thank you? I'm only sorry you weren't going to be here with us longer. I wish you could have gotten higher, but why don't you go up and say hello to the folks?
Well, I'll get higher next time.
Man, is that the Reaper Man?
That's the Reaper Man.
I believe he's losing his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
This is a Russ Belville Show news alert. Whatever you do, don't smoke pot. You don't want to turn out to be a loser, like Olympian Michael Phelps, actor Jack Nicholson, singer Miley Cyrus, rocket scientist Dr. Carl Sagan, pop star Rihanna, actress Cameron Diaz, country legend Willie Nelson, President Barack Obama, Cy Young pitcher Tim Lincecum.
Oh, have you ever met that funny Reaper Man? Have you ever met that funny Reaper
Man?
If he says he swam to China and he sells you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that Reaper Man.
That cake is all now.
100 million other Americans.
Have you ever met funny Reaper Man? If he says he walks the ocean anytime he takes a notion, then you know you're talking to Reaper Man.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
We're having some difficulties getting our mom for marijuana on the air, so I'll do a little rant first, and then we'll see if we can get them at the end of the show. There's an amazing story, and I sent this out over my Twitter account. Just incredible, and literally, in the literal meaning of incredible, I cannot believe this is happening. Story out of Rolling Stone magazine concerning the recent settlement offer, the settlement with HSBC Bank. And first of all, Matt Taibbi is probably the best journalist out there working on this high finance, you know, billionaire world of crime that never gets punished. They're allowed to flout the law. They're allowed to ransack our tax dollars, and they never, ever get punished. In fact, they usually get bonuses, right? They usually, you know, do better with our bailouts. Well, this time, his reporting on the high finance settlement with British mega bank HSBC shows you the high finance criminals finance your high and profit handsomely while you go to prison if you try to profit. This is what Taibbi writes here. Assistant Attorney General and longtime Bill Clinton pal Lanny Brewer this week signed off on a settlement deal with the British banking giant HSBC, despite the fact that HSBC admitted to laundering billions of dollars for Colombian and Mexican drug cartels, among others, and violating a host of important banking laws from the Bank Secrecy Act to the Trading with the Enemy Act, Brewer and his Justice Department, elected not to pursue criminal prosecution of the bank, opting instead for a record financial settlement of $1.9 billion, which, as one analyst noted, is about 5 weeks of income for the bank. Okay, so the other day, President Obama said something about, you know, marijuana users wouldn't be a high priority for his Justice Department. They got bigger fish to fry. Here's the land shark. Go get it, okay? This is the big fish to fry. What, you're letting these people skate? You're letting them just get away with trading, with laundering $9 billion worth of terrorist and drug cartel? I'm sorry, I'm being redundant. Terrorist money? These murderers who are putting people in vats of acid and terrorizing the people of Mexico and dumping bodies onto the freeway during the commute, you're helping them profit from that, and not a single criminal charge whatsoever? Really? Really? Wow. All right. Let's put some perspective on this, because, you know, you get numbers like 1.9 billion. That kind of blows your mind. So let's reduce the scale a little bit here so we can kind of get a feel for what's going on here. Let's try and imagine it's one of us, okay? Let's assume you're a contract bookkeeper for some company, and you make the U.S. median household income of $45,000 a year. Nice work if you can get it. Now, let's pretend your weed dealer friend gives you $20,000 of his profit to deposit every month, by the way, $20,000 of profit every month for years to deposit in your company's accounts to launder it. Now, let's imagine that you're caught by the police and you admit all of this to them and you're facing decades in prison, and they say, that's okay. We're not going to arrest you or charge you with any crimes. Would you take a settlement of a $4,300 civil fine instead? Yeah. You think we're going to get that kind of treatment? Hell no. Now, keep in mind that you're not actually going to be on the hook for the $4,300 fine. Your company is going to pay that for you. And not only that, but you even get to keep your job and some of the bonuses you earned for being the guy who brought $20,000 worth of monthly income to the company. Isn't that amazing? Now, this is from the settlement details of Assistant Attorney General Brewer. As a result of the government's investigation, HSBC has clawed back deferred compensation bonuses given to some of its most senior U.S. anti-money laundering and compliance officers, and agreed to partially defer bonus compensation for its most senior officials during the five-year period of the deferred prosecution agreement. Wow. That's right. The feds caught you laundering some weed dealers $20,000 a month red-handed, and you openly admitted it to them. And not only are you not going to be charged with any crimes, you agreed. Now, this wasn't forced upon you. You got to negotiate this. You got to deal. Haggle. You agreed to keep your job. Your company pays the $4,300 fine, and you get some of your bonus for bringing in the drug money now, and you get the rest of your bonus after 5 years. Wow. Now, why do you, Mr. Bookkeeper, get such preferred treatment? Because if we actually seized your company's ill-gotten assets and prosecuted, convicted, and imprisoned you, your company might go under. I can't make this shit up. This is how the New York Times framed it. Federal and state authorities have chosen not to indict HSBC. Right? Here's criminals who admitted to Justice Department officials that they helped terrorists launder money in the billions, and we chose not to indict. Why would we want to go after those guys? We got bigger fish to fry. Like, you know, let's go after some medical marijuana dispensary in El Cajon or something. Let's go raid a big old farm in Southern Oregon or something. We got bigger fish to fry than, you know, laundering $9 billion for terrorists. Wow. So, chosen not to indict HSBC, the London-based bank, on charges of vast and prolonged money laundering, for fear that criminal prosecution would topple the bank and, in the process, endanger the financial system. Whew, wow, what a relief. You might have been worried, figuring that really, you know, when it gets right down to it, you're just another bookkeeper. There are a lot of bookkeepers out there. Your company's been around since 1865 and did fine without you all those decades. But I guess it turns out that you're the best goddamn bookkeeper in history. And without you walking the streets and enjoying your bonuses, the entire planet will be cast into financial ruin. Wow. Now, you see, this is frustrating. This is that the banks aren't just too big to fail. They're too big to jail. Let me give you the closing here from Matt Taibbi, writing in Rolling Stone. They're now saying that if you're not an important cog in the global financial system, you can't get away with anything, not even simple possession. You will be jailed, and whatever cash they find on you, they'll seize on the spot and convert into new cruisers or toys for your local SWAT team, which will be deployed to kick in the doors of houses where more such inessential economic cogs like you live. On the other hand, if you're an important person and you work for a big international bank, you won't be prosecuted even if you launder $9 billion. Even if you actively collude with the people at the very top of the international narcotics trade, your punishment will be far smaller than that of the person at the very bottom of the world drug pyramid. Man. It's just obscene what's going on here. And keep in mind, the $1.9 billion settlement, right? That's money that comes into the Justice Department coffers, right? You know how much money the Justice Department made seizing from us? You know, they catch us with a grow, and then they take your boat, they take your house, they take your cash. And then you're supposed to go to court and prove that it wasn't drug money by paying your lawyer the money you don't have because it was seized, right? You understand how that works. $1.8 billion in 2010 fiscal year. So $1.9 billion for, you know, collected from the bank that helped terrorists profit for $9 billion or more. And just about the same amount from you and me from growing a plant or smoking a doobie. Yes. It's all about the profit. We got a song we play called Simply Business, and this story just goes to show you exactly how much business it is. If you don't know about asset forfeiture, it's definitely something you should be looking up. You should be learning more about. You can go to fear.org, forfeiture endangers American rights, FEAR.org. They've got information on this. These asset forfeiture cases are sick. They are policing for profit is what it really goes down to. One of the stories that Taibbi tells in the Rolling Stone article, excuse me a moment. One of the stories Taibbi tells in the Rolling Stone article is of the man who got a $50,000 insurance settlement, some deal, and he had to go collect it. He's in Indiana. And he goes to collect the $50,000 and whatever he spent the rest on, but he had $17,000 in cash at the end of whatever. And so he's got the $17,000 in cash, and so he's driving back, and the Indiana State Patrol pulls him over for, you know, taillight or whatever the hell. And so they find this guy's got $17,000 in cash. And the reason they were able to search, they ran a drug dog, as they tend to do. They ran a drug dog around his car, and the dog alerted. Now, they found the $17,000 in cash, but they didn't find any drugs. This guy has no record with drugs, never used drugs, never smoked a doob. He's not into drugs, right? But the dog alerted, which, because, you know, there's a lot of reasons a dog can alert, not the least of which a cop making them alert. And the cop sees the $17,000. The man goes to goes back to his insurance company. He gets all the proof. You know, he gets all the paperwork. Yeah, there's been a misunderstanding. This must have been a misunderstanding. Here's all the paperwork. You know, I'll show you. They still wanted to keep the $17,000 on the theory that he could, in the future, buy drugs with it. That's how sick and insane this has gotten. There's another very famous case, Tennessee, where one of the highways or freeways that goes in and out of Nashville, they found that cops were pulling people over 10 times as often on the way that the money was coming compared to the other side of the freeway, which is the direction the marijuana was going. So it wasn't a matter of trying to catch the marijuana. They wanted people to take the marijuana from the rural areas up to Nashville, sell it, get all the money, then start taking it back down the freeway the other direction, and then catch them when they got the money so they could make those seizures. This is as un-American as anything I can possibly imagine. And seeing this settlement with HSBC, I mean, it's not as if we don't know that there's a different system of justice for the extremely rich versus the rest of us. But what this codifies into, you know, our Justice Department's policies is that we do only care about going after the people on the bottom. We do disproportionately punish the guy who's caught with the joint, the kid in New York City who's fooled into taking it out of his pocket so he can be arrested. The medical grower it doesn't matter if it's California or Texas, if he's somebody growing just to try to stay well. We are focused on those people, but we don't seem to be focused on the others. I agree with Taibbi in this post in that you want to stop this sort of stuff from happening. It's time to criminally indict some of these people. What sort of reason do they have not to just do this again? There is none. There is no penalty for what they're doing. There's just more incentive to launder more drug money in more creative ways. George Carlin said it best. You want to see a severe slowdown in the global drug trade. You frog march a few of those white rich banker types into real pound them in the ass prison, and you'll start to see a lot of that drug traffic going away. It's just frustrating. It's so frustrating to know that they'd rather terrorists and Mexican criminals and murderers profit from this trade than us, than Americans, than American farmers who are desperate for some crop to keep their land, something to keep their way of life. And yet we'll just trade it away. We'll just give it all away to the damn criminals. This is obscene. And President Obama, your Justice Department can do better than this. Why? Why are you so in bed with these Wall Street types? They are playing us for chumps and suckers. This whole game of too big to fail. Oh, the whole economy will collapse. I don't believe that for a second. Break up the big banks like we broke up big telephone, like we broke up any other thing that became too big to fail. Because too big to fail is too big to exist, if you ask me. Where are all these free market conservatives when this sort of stuff is going on? When the market forces and would take these guys down, except for their massive lobbying abilities and their oversized, overscale ability to manipulate the markets. Don't even get me into the LIBOR scandal. I know I don't want to diverge too much from marijuana today, I promised. Just look up LIBOR, LIBOR, and get a little education on that. All right, folks, we got to take a break because, as you can tell, the cold is taking the better of me. So sit back and relax, and when we come back, we'll talk some more.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
My name is Diane Goldstein. I'm a retired lieutenant from Redondo Beach Police Department in Southern California. I'm married. I have a son. I got into law enforcement for a lot of different reasons. One of it is because family was very important to me. I had a brother, starting at the age of 11, had a drug addiction problem. And although he was older than me, I was always my brother's keeper. That played a large part of wanting to not only help my family specifically, but my community in general. But what I saw is from 1983 to 2004, the ramp up in the war on drugs, the overcriminalization of America, period, has changed the relationship that cops have with their communities. We no longer have relationships with them. We come in, we police them, and we leave. My older brother, Billy, he got pulled over by an agency in Orange County, and he had a pocket knife on him that they said was illegal. He calls me up from jail, and he says, I'm in jail, got arrested, cops went into the hotel room, they found heroin, and that started this couple-month quick decline. And ultimately led to his death at age 44. Why are we putting people who have a medical issue away in jail? It really started making me look at what is wrong with our system. Not everybody is a horrible bad guy. We need to change how we treat all offenders. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Eliminate mandatory minimums. Divert kids out of the system at the first opportunity. Fund more prevention programs for juvenile offenders. I want to try to make certain that what happened to our family doesn't happen to other people's families. We have to give everybody more than one chance in life.
activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, my apologies. We have to adjust the schedule a little bit. We're unable to raise Bonnie Jean from Kansas for our Listen to Your Mother segment. So I'm just going to go ahead with some activist agenda here and talk a little bit about what does state legalization in Washington and Colorado mean for hemp? In the 2012 general election, Washington State and Colorado legalized the possession of an ounce of usable marijuana and mandated state regulation cultivation, processing, and retail distribution of cannabis products. But what does that mean for industrial hemp? As you know, industrial or non-drug hemp is just the low THC cousin to psychoactive marijuana. We're the only industrialized country in the world that still bans hemp production. Because of that ban, we are the world's greatest importer of hemp. This is a $400 million market annually in the United States, with precisely 0% of that going to the American economy through U.S. farmers and processors. Colorado's Amendment 64 directs the General Assembly to regulate the cultivation, processing, and sale of industrial hemp. Coloradans now have the constitutional right to grow their own six plants, and those could be hemp plants, but nobody's really going to undertake the full-scale hemp farming until Colorado works out the regulations, which they think, I think, have to start around July 2013 and have the stores go to the 2014, I believe. And Washington State's initiative I-502 modifies the definition of marijuana under Washington state law, so hemp is no longer covered in the state drug laws. As of December 6, 2012, farmers could be legally planting fields of industrial hemp under state law. But to date, no Washington farmers have announced any plans to cultivate industrial hemp, presumably until they know the answer to one important question. Will the Drug Enforcement Agency place a high priority on raiding non-drug, state-legal hemp farms? After all, Oregon and a few other states have already had laws on the books for years allowing cultivation of industrial hemp. In addition, Oregon lowered cannabis to Schedule II as a drug. Yet without that federal cultivation permit from the DEA, the permit they never grant, not a single hemp crop has yet to be harvested. Will it make any more difference to the DEA that Washington and Colorado legalized hemp by popular vote than Oregon legalizing hemp through the legislature? The United States imports $10.5 million worth of raw hemp products annually, mostly from China. This may be a small figure in the global economy, but how much more hemp would we use if we could produce it domestically? How eager is the federal government to explain why our armed agents are raiding a rural farmer trying to earn a living by growing a legal, non-drug crop? Besides, the economic arguments for beginning the hemp crops in Washington and Colorado are the ecological arguments. It's an organic crop that scrubs five times more carbon dioxide from the atmosphere than trees do. That helps us fight climate change. State governments, city transit, school buses, and the like could all be mandated to be diesel vehicles burning hemp fuel. Hemp seed yields an incredibly nutritious food source in addition to the oil used for fuel and biodegradable plastics. Perhaps most exciting is the use of hemp fiber. It creates superior paper with far less environmental damage, using less acreage and harvesting more often than tree paper. It is used in fiberglass components to make stronger and lighter materials for cars. As a cloth, hemp regulates body temperature better than cotton, and new processing techniques make hemp cloth just as soft and pliable. Reducing our production of cotton would be a huge benefit to the environment, for up to 1/6 of all pesticides used on Earth are for cotton crops that only use 1/40 of the global farmland. One exciting use of hemp fiber comes in the form of substitutes for concrete blocks. In the south of France, where hemp cultivation is legal and the materials are cheap, a vintner recently built a brand new 9,000 square foot winery using hemp mixed with lime into blocks. The owner, featured in a November post in Wine Spectator, decided he wanted an environmentally friendly building that matched his philosophy for organic wine production. With the hemp lime blocks, he found the perfect material. In addition to the hemp itself having scrubbed the air of carbon dioxide, the process of the lime carbonating the hemp will continue to pull in carbon dioxide from the air for 20 to 25 years. The blocks themselves will last 100 years or more and are completely biodegradable. Of particular interest to the winemakers was the breathability factor. The hemp blocks are natural insulators with great acoustic dampening properties. Along with building the winery into the natural earth hillside, the hemp blocks help to keep the temperature in the winery between 54 and 64 degrees Fahrenheit year-round, even without an air conditioning system. Even as the wine ferments and produces heat, the special construction of the winery and its hemp blocks will keep the temperature inside steady, even as outside temperatures range from 21 to 93 degrees. Two of the biggest problems facing the country are the economy and the environment. Continuing to deny our farmers and entrepreneurs the opportunity to restart the American hemp industry is a mistake we can't afford to make anymore. All right, Tokers, I know I'm closing a little bit early, but I think I'm done. I don't think I can go any farther tonight. Thanks for joining us here for hour one, the Russ Belville Show. I'm going to put a replay on for Toker Talk Radio because I'm sick, people. I'm trying, but this is it. This is all I can do for today. It's all I can muster. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And